This is episode 141 of the Cranial Sacral Podcasts. Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I hope that you are safe out there, safe and healthy. What a blessing to feel safe in these uncertain times when the primacy of health has really come to the forefront of many people's consciousness. Today we're going to hear from Liz Hartshorn, who lives and practices in New York City. You may recognize Liz's name. She contributed to our Meditation March. That was episode 127, if you want to check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. And Liz will talk some about living in New York City during the pandemic, just a little bit. And then she'll tell us more about her background. Started with massage therapy and moved into cranial sacral work through Upledger and then Franklin Sills. She has a background in esoteric healing. She's a somatic experiencing practitioner as well. And for an area of focus for our discussion, she'll share with us some of her experience of Judith Blackstone's realization process and help us to better understand that particular training, which has been growing in popularity. She'll share how it's helped her in her personal life and then also in her professional practice as well. It was really nice visiting with Liz. She just got such a solid and relatable vibe. I really enjoyed visiting with her, and I hope you do too. Going to be a short intro for today. I've got a date with a paintbrush, trying to get some of these house projects wrapped up before work begins to come back online more fully. Oh, I need to let you know I was a little slow to hit the record button, so I cut out like the first like 20 seconds of our discussion. Sorry. Basically, all you miss is me just asking Liz about what's going on in New York City, and so we jump right in there. All right, everybody, enjoy Liz.
So a little bit about being living in New York City right now, and just, you know, the sort of the surreal nature, I'm sure, for all of us of this time. I would say that I feel being in New York City is different than being in a lot of other places in the country because of the density, right? The density of the population. That's one thing that has always drawn me to New York. And then it's also like in times like this where you know, you're sort of like living in a sardine can all the time, so that navigating these times, all right, can be both challenging and very heartwarming. You know, it's like I said to you, it's like 7 o'clock every night we hear these cheers. So that sense of being in your home yet not being isolated is still very real for me, and the ability to connect with other New Yorkers just through the loudness of New York, if you will, is there. So there's that, you know, sort of that piece of it. And for myself, you know, sort of on a personal level, just being able to honestly, Ryan, navigate this in the way that I try to navigate any challenging set of circumstances in life. And I think that much of what I've done with the realization process for myself, and then, you know, being a practitioner of biodynamics and cranial sacral therapy, you know, it's just that whole paradigm of what we're orienting to and not gripping on to the circumstances, but being able to go with the flow a little bit more. And so even with the constriction of what's going on now, finding spaciousness, right? Finding stillness.
Yeah. If you were to grade yourself on how well you're handling this crisis, what grade would you give yourself?
Oh, yeah. We're diving right into get to know Liz Hartshorn right away. Because I'm one of those people who's like, you know, a sort of a nitpicker about details. So I would say all in all that I would give myself like probably an 80% that I'm doing pretty well. And I'm aware, because I do have people in my life who are close to me who have it. So I'm aware then of my own constriction around that, right? yet I don't feel like I'm dissociating, right? You know, it's like I can hold that.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like giving myself an 80. It's kind of like, am I really holding it? Am I really okay in this?
Yeah, I go through waves myself. I really kind of freaked out for the first week when the governor shut us all down. I had a pretty difficult few days. There was just so much to manage in such a short amount of time. Trying to get good, reliable information about where the government stood, where my professional organization stood, how I personally stood about interacting with others. And then also managing my clients, and not to mention the whole financial aspect, looking at the federal aid programs, and just there was a bunch of information to navigate, and it was all important, not to mention staying informed about the virus and the disease itself. I was a little overwhelmed, and I was really feeling that stress up in my head, but it's taken me a while to come down. I'm feeling much more grounded now, and I learned some valuable lessons. I kind of think that I got my act together. I've been meditating for several decades, and think I got it all together. And yet, I was really, really thrown. Yeah.
Well, I think it is, you know, as probably any big life experience like this is, it just reminds us how fragile we are, and that, it just reinforces for me then that the practice, once we come out of this, right, that this is the reason I do these practices,
Yep.
right?
That's
Because
right.
I understand how delicate our dynamic systems are. And even though we feel like we know so much about ourselves, we don't know anything. know, those viruses, right? The viruses are much more powerful than we are.
They will show you things about yourself you need to learn. Yeah.
Well, and I don't have children, so I can imagine that makes a whole nother layer of navigation for you.
Yeah,
So just,
it definitely does. Yeah, and it's really one of the good things about all of this is I'm at home with my family. I travel so much to teach. Being able to be home day after day after day is really been great in many ways. It's been good to spend a lot more face time with them, but then also still learn how to set up boundaries so I can get the work done that I need to get done. I'm as busy now as I ever have been. I've had to put out a lot of fires from a professional standpoint over the last couple of weeks.
I bet you have.
Yeah, and it's not just practice. Some stuff with distribution of audiobooks I'm doing for Mike Boxhall and Sharyona. That outlet was shut down. So I've been scrambling with the web developer to get a whole new outlet set up. So I won't go into all that, but been a lot of challenges. But being home with the kids has been one of the great blessings that has come out of, I've gotten to know them better just over these few weeks that we've been in this so far, and that's a good thing.
I bet. I bet.
All right, well, I don't want to dwell too much on the whole
I hear
virus
you.
situation. There's a lot more going on in the world too, so.
There is.
Well, some of our guests are going to recognize you from the meditation that you contributed to our meditation march. It was a great one. So I'd like you to tell us more about your background and let us know how this therapeutic world unfolded for you, in particular the world of craniosacral therapy. And please take your time. And everybody finds this fascinating, they tell me, to hear people's stories. So.
And how we all come to biodynamics in particular, or cranial work in particular,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So I started my practice in 92, 1992, as a massage therapist. And I'm no longer, but I was a long distance runner. And in doing that, I focused a lot of my massage practice on working with athletes and doing a lot of, the orthopedic kind of work back then. But right out of school, I took my first cranial class with Upledger. Right out of massage school, I took my first cranial class with Upledger. And it's like the first class, I was so mechanically oriented athletically, right, that the cranial work kind of threw me a little bit. I was like, what is this stuff? You know, but it was sort of that first introduction to this is a different way of interacting with the body. And so it took me, I would say, probably a year to kind of settle into incorporating just, you know, the 10-step protocol, right, of Upledger back then. And so that was like 93, 94 that I was already incorporating it. And I was introduced to another, I'm trying to think when that was, like 98, I think I was introduced to a different osteopath. And I took some of his trainings as well. And he had his own huge modality spin-off that he introduced me to his understandings of the biodynamic kind of framework, though he wasn't calling it that. So it was more like the fluid dynamic understanding. So that brought me a little more into, let's say, like this holistic understanding of the body and interacting with the body. And I have always been in private practice and really drawing, you know, I imagine this is true for a lot of folks. It's like whoever is inherently drawn to your practice then also guided me in terms of what I felt I needed to learn more about. And so I've always attracted, even though I had like this initially, this sort of, you know, weekend warrior athletic kind of clientele, I always attracted much more complex medical issues, early developmental stuff. And, you know, back in those days, working with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, you know, it was like that it was a syndrome and we didn't really understand much about it. But I knew that I needed, because it was showing up in my treatment table so much, that I needed to get some more information about it. And I, to jump forward a little bit, I studied with Franklin Sills through Stillpoint, right, with Clara, and Clara Favalli. And to this day, Clara says that this didn't happen, but I received a postcard in the mail announcing that Franklin was going to, she was bringing Franklin to do an intro to biodynamics to New York City in 2006. And Clara still says that she never sent out a postcard, but clears in my memory, I can still see this little picture of Franklin on this postcard. And another friend of mine got the same postcard. So yeah, who knows where that postcard came from, Ryan, but somehow I was like, oh, who's this guy? And I hadn't ever heard of him.
Oh.
And at that point, I hadn't been introduced to him. And so I was like, hey, all right, I'll just, you know, take this 4-day class with him in New York City. And that was it, right? It's like as soon as I was introduced to him and the way he framed cranial work, and the way he would also, he does, you know, he brings in the relational field as sort of the one of the primary aspects of the work, that it really began to speak to a lot of what I thought were sort of my missing pieces. And I also studied a type of energy work called esoteric healing in the 90s, which is an off-the-body chakra, basically.
Yeah.
But also, it comes out of, have you heard of it? Comes out of Tibetan, right? Tibetan Buddhism. And if you know much about it, it's also a very detailed protocol, if you will. It's not really a protocol, but it's a very detailed energy system. And so Franklin's way of working in that weekend really brought these different aspects of myself into one modality, being biodynamics, right? It brought in the energy awareness. It brought in this, we'll say the psychological piece, but, you know, the relational piece held as a touch therapist and with a deep appreciation for anatomy and the need to really understand anatomy as you're meeting it, right? In these, for me, these complex cases.
I hear that from many people, that biodynamics is just, was this melting pot where all of these experiences they had had therapeutically, spiritually, life-wise, all came together and were able to be held and contained. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that even though, you know, Franklin, as you know from interviewing him yourself and his own readings, that, you know, his experience as a Buddhist monk and his, you know, devotion to that, it's something that I personally resonate with, yet I don't feel, I also got from him that, you know, that's not part of the practice, right? It's that, you know, you have your own personal belief system, yet that, as he always says, it's like you put that behind the curtain. And yet there within that, which is, you know, it's sort of the essential part of working with the breath of life, is like what's underneath it all, right? And so he also sort of mirrored for me that appreciation that I may have my individual experience, yet I'm meeting someone else's experience. And how do I hold that within the breath of life and dynamic stillness? And so, yeah, he just really brought all these different aspects of my life experience and my professional experience together. And that's something that I feel really profoundly loyal to, right? As a cranial sacral therapist, that it gives me the container to hold those different aspects of myself. Yet I'm the facilitator, right? And not imposing. Like I don't know what is best for somebody else, and that's part of the richness of the work, is seeing and supporting them in finding that for themselves.
Right, right. So when you were a student in the foundation training, this was like 2006, 2007, you said?
At the first intro class that I did was 2006, and then he came back in 2008 to teach the first foundation training with Stillpoint here in New York City.
Okay.
So I took that 2008 through to the early 2011. And then I went on the assistant track for the next two foundation trainings.
Okay.
And you know how that is. It's like I feel so blessed that I got to hear him teach it, the foundation training, three different times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So as a student really kind of coming into this biodynamic model in such a prolonged and solid way, in a foundation training, what were some of the challenges for you? What did you learn about yourself in foundation training? I know there's usually many things we learn, but there's usually a few that stand out.
Well, I kind of, you know, and I think that I remember hearing you say the same thing. It's like you walk in and you think like everything's okay, and it just like blows you apart. I went through such a hard time, right? It's like I just had to let so many different layers of myself. I had to meet my resistance and let it go. And I had to, oh my gosh, I had to get so much support, like for my own emotional growth, right? My own healing that really has to happen. That part of it was super hard for me or absolutely necessary so that I could learn and be able to sit right with other people. So that was one of the hardest things. And then trusting what I was perceiving, you know, the overall process of working with the subtleties and learning to trust that and be with it in an embodied way. And because even though I had been doing cranial sacral work, I think one of my biggest edges was I need to make change, right? I need to impose. And I think that was one of the big learnings for me, is like, back off, Liz. It's kind of like, get out of your hands so you can get into your hands.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was also a very big piece for me. It was one of the most profound experiences for me. And I think coming into a community, too. where, like you said, it's like so many of us come into the cranial world and feel like, wow, this is it. This fits. I fit.
Yeah.
And then to meet other people who, like, get it and feel like they finally fit into something where it just, there's so much, there's the, within the fit, I don't even mean that word fit, though, you know, it's kind of like within it, there's that freedom, the fluidity.
Yeah.
And how comfortable that was to, like, sit with 30, 40, 50 people every 3 months and just be in it together, right? That process of holding space for everybody in their learnings and breakdowns and breakthroughs.
Yeah.
It was really profound.
All right. I'm curious about how your practice evolved over this time. You start off as more of like a structural oriented massage person.
Yeah.
And then
got
a little bit more subtle, a little bit more fluid. And so how did your practice change? I mean, from what I can tell from your web presence, you still will do some manual work and do some massage kind of body work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do too at times, you know, because it's needed. And also I kind of like it. It breaks my day up a little bit instead of sitting there all day long. But so tell me the story of how your practice changed. Did you start seeking different kinds of clients? Did you convert your existing clients? How'd that work?
Yeah, because I was so orthopedically oriented, it was challenging for me to convert clients.
Yeah.
And that became clear really fast.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. You kind of got to reinvent your practice usually. But.
Yeah. And I feel like over the past 10 years, it's taken me 10 years, I would say, to really reinvent my practice. And that it probably took me up until 5 years ago where I would actually not take new massage clients, that my practice felt like it was substantial enough as a cranial practice that I knew that I was going to be okay in that transition. And just to say, you know, there was also, I was doing the esoteric healing, which was, you know, sort of this weird polarity for me of like hands completely off the body and then doing this, you know, neuromuscular work and myofascial release and like, you know, in the tissue stuff. So that also, I think having those two polarities helped me then come to more of a clarity about I need to be open to attracting this meld of a client. And so I did kind of actively work on my networking to bring in more cranial-oriented clients. Mm-hmm. And then I also, you know, as I mentioned, with a lot of the more complex medical and, shall we use the word, trauma-oriented clients that I was attracting, there's a big piece in the way that Franklin teaches on using focusing. And it's a great, right, dialoguing piece for biodynamics. And yet I found that I needed more, which is why 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I took the somatic experiencing training. Mm-hmm. Because I felt that that was the next piece. And I think that I really felt that way because, you know, I'm sure other folks experience this too. It's like ways to support, again, to support people in their own embodied experience. And I needed more skills to support that autonomic nervous system dysregulation.
Yeah.
And somatic experiencing has been that next piece of like, this is the right fit. I'm so glad I've done this, that it's also deepened my perceptive skills as well. And it's given me some tools to send people away with,
right?
Which is also a huge part for me. A huge part of my work is that you're not going to get off my table and leave my office without feeling that there's been one molecule of something that has shifted for you today, and or that you're taking something with you that you can apply in your daily life. So that for me, it's also really important that I'm also empowering people, right? That they're experiencing this very expansive work in the biodynamic realm, and yet I want you to have this really, I want you to have a tangible cognitive experience of what's happening. Yeah. And that you leave feeling like you can explain to somebody what just happened to you.
Yeah, that's smart. You know, many, or at least for myself, I didn't even know how much I needed that added into my practice.
Right.
When I was first going. Yeah, there's a lot of people floating out, feeling better, but it wasn't really a complete, or let's say a really contained experience I was bringing them. And you know, experience taught me that over time, and more education, that extra piece is vital.
Yeah. And just to share some of my own personal history is that, you know, the same, you know, it's like that, even being in the foundation training, for me to start to learn the difference between my dissociation and presence, mm-hmm. right? And an embodied sense of presence. And that in itself was an eye opener for me, of like, oh, right. I get blown out of the back of my body. I need to stay here. Yeah. And knowing that of that sort of, you know, that dissociative space feels so yummy.
Yeah.
Right? It feels so yummy. And yet it's not embodied, right? And it's not, you're not having that full, rich experience of yourself. Right, you're in what they say in somatic experiencing, right? You're in your survival energy, not in your life force.
Yeah. I want to back up for a second because you mentioned esoteric healing a couple of times now. You know, one of the most profound, powerful healing experiences I've ever had, strongest, was from someone who did esoteric healing on me.
Awesome.
I was really new in the field, like a year out of massage school possibly, but was starting to get into the craniosacral work. I was working at a chiropractic office, and we had a lady come in to get a session with me. The doctor referred her to me. So I said, hey, let's do craniosacral therapy. I'm kind of new at this, but I really like it. I think it's very valuable. Let's try it. So I'm just doing like a vault hold on her, and I wasn't a very grounded person back then. I had a lot of stuff to learn and work on. And so after a while, I'm just kind of sitting there waiting to feel some things, waiting for the body to settle. And she kind of turns her head back and she looks at me and she says, I think I need to do something for you.
While she's on your table.
While she's on my table. And I'm like, okay. So she's like, just sit there. She gets off the table, goes over, grabs her purse off the chair in the corner, pulls out a crystal, probably about 3 inches long, comes up to me and starts to like unwind and then fill up my chakras one at a time. I thought I was going to go into orbit. I will, till the day I die, I'll never forget the experience of being filled up with so much energy. That felt so wholesome, really. I mean, it was really right on in many, many ways. I think she might have misjudged my capacity to take change at that point.
Yeah.
But the felt sense of the power of the change was undeniable. And she didn't touch me. She was like 6 feet away from me, you know, doing this. Yeah. And it really opened my eyes. I was already pretty open-minded then, but it opened my eyes even more. I'm like, what did you just do? And she's like, well, I've been studying this stuff, esoteric healing. And she didn't get back on the table. That was it. I got paid. I got a treatment. And she left.
You're like, this is all good. I'm loving this.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, how did you find that type of work? What drew it to you way back when?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, more personal revealing of my own history, I would say that, again, like so many of us who've had really challenging childhoods, I grew up in the suburbs and I was able to get out of the house and be in nature. And so I had a very active imagination, shall we say, with the energies of nature.
Great.
And I just thought that that was just like my own private little world, right? And even though I was raised in a Christian household, I could tell that what I was experiencing outside was different than what I was being taught, like in the tradition that I was raised in. And I think that then I just had these sort of natural, as life does, you know, these people who come into your life when I was in college who are offering different perspectives, right? I went to Ohio State University and, you know, the late 70s. And so I studied women's studies and history, and my professors were, many of them were, you know, like the 60s radicals who were introducing me to sort of the fringe of women's studies, as well as the fringe of like labor law and you know, like union organizing, and then also this whole concept of different kinds of religions that I hadn't really been introduced to, because I was raised in this tiny little town and outside of Cleveland, Ohio. And I think that when that thing, just the concepts were introduced to me, then it just kind of filtered through my head of like, huh. And I started to study some Native American traditions, and I was drawn to different, you know, in that, in sort of that culture. I also lived my life as a lesbian, and I came out in my college years too. So I was drawn into some of the Wiccan kinds of things that were prevalent back then in the women's community.
Yeah.
And again, it just being sort of this wide-eyed little white girl from Cleveland, Ohio, that was like, what the heck is all this stuff? But I loved it. I was like, wow, you know, there's another way of being. Yeah. Wow.
That's great.
Yeah. So that, you know, fast forward again to right after I graduated from massage school, so 92, 93, I met a PT who did esoteric healing.
Okay.
And a client of mine then was seeing this PT, and the client came back to me and said, you know, this, you need to study this, Liz. You're naturally drawn to this. I can tell, like doing the cranial work with you, that this is something that would really fit. And for some reason I was like, All right, I'll take your advice. And I contacted this person, and she was like, maybe a month later, was offering a small class right here in New York. And I was like, all right, I'm in. It was also another one of those, I hadn't even thought about this, Ryan. I should have prepared my memory banks before. That it was, again, sort of that natural fit of walking into a class of 15 people, and you know, esoteric healing is it's very specific energetically.
Yeah.
Right. So that it's working with the nadis, it's working with the different layers, it's the sheaths, there's real specificity to it that for my little brain, my linear brain was like, oh, I love all this detail. This is really juicy. And also inherent in it is you're not, much like in biodynamics, within the esoteric paradigm, is you are asked, first you have to ask permission to work with someone, and you are asking the energies to come into their own natural balance. You're not imposing, right? You sort of sense into it and perceive it, and you wait for it to shift under its own, right? Which now with my biodynamics awareness, it's like, it's just potency.
Yeah.
And you're holding it with that awareness of it's going to, you know, the three functions of potency. It's going to do its own thing just within the relational field, the resonance, that it's smarter than I am.
Yeah.
That was sort of my first introduction, actually, was through esoteric healing of, oh, don't do. There's a non-doing. There's a way to be with this. Yeah. Crazy. I hadn't even thought about that going into this talking to you.
It's the first time anybody has mentioned esoteric healing to me in quite some time.
Yeah, it's actually not well known.
Yeah, yeah, it's really not. It was big in the community I was around in Arizona back in the time. Yeah, I interfaced with several people, but it's been quite a while since I've heard anybody mention it. That's great. Brought back a great memory for me.
Yeah, thankfully. Well, and now, you know, in this time of such change, I mean, who knows? I've got a feeling, Ryan, that I'm just going to completely now have to, you know, recreate myself yet again. You know, it's like being a body worker, a touch therapist. It's like how many different lives can you have within the 30 years that I've been practicing? And I feel like right now it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, doing distant work. Right? Okay, I can definitely do distant work now because I did it within the esoteric paradigm. I've done a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I just kind of put it aside because I was really enjoying the biodynamic work and the touch. And so now it's like, all right, universe, what are you asking us to do? I got to kind of throw myself up in the air and shake it about and see how I come down in this next couple of months, you know?
Yeah. So we had laid out for us a kind of a primary topic of discussion was to talk about the realization process.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the meditation that you offered. I was hoping to do more research into it and listen to some of Judith's work or read some of it, but I've had to put out some fires over the last 72 hours that kind of took that out of the picture. So I'm fairly uninformed other than doing some reading on the website. So I just really want to let you lead us through the process of explaining a little bit about Judith and how this program is put together. There's more complexity than I originally thought when I was going through the website and I saw there were different aspects of it. Or levels, if you have. So if you could begin to fill out this picture of what's the realization process.
Yeah. So that was actually, you also interviewed Shannon Daly mm-hmm. when you interviewed Clara, who is now one of the primary teachers for Still Point. And Shannon was one of the assistants in my foundation training. And she and her partner, Tom Bertels, introduced me and my partner, Lori Dawson, to the realization process. And so I met Judith and started studying with Judith in 2011, right after I finished the foundation training. I thought, okay, now I got enough energy that I can delve into another learning here. And I feel very strongly that it's been an inherent part of my own healing. And that she's in some ways, I wish, you know, if I could take some of my primary teachers and from all over and bring them together, that there would be this common thread, these common threads. So in many ways, she's similar to Franklin in that, you know, first they're of the same generation and their personal journey led them to the work that they're doing, right? So her experience as a dancer and her injuries led her within her own spiritual practice to develop the realization process. One of the things that drew me to it is that it's not affiliated with any particular lineage. Mm-hmm. So again, for me, we have this thread of non-doing, if you will, right? And so what she developed are these practices. They're, you know, we can call them meditations because they are working with our awareness and with our own experience of non-duality, which I would say is also dynamic stillness. And the practices, she developed them so that we can have our own individual experience of realizing ourselves as that dimension of stillness, as that dimension of what she calls fundamental consciousness. And there, like you said, there's three or four different branches to it, because now she's has put together a more structured part of it, part of the practices for specifically for working with trauma. Yet then there initially were these three sort of, shall we say, pillars of it, that there is the psycho-spiritual work, which is exploring your own psycho-spiritual self. And then there's the embodied movement, so that you can also have it, the practices through specific movement practices to experience yourself as fundamental consciousness. And she's changed the names of these things since I studied it with her. So then she also, I think there's the leg of it that is just the meditation practices, right? So that is just deepening our mechanisms, the dynamic sense of our mechanisms, right? The dimensionality of ourselves within fundamental consciousness. And that she uses, it's not that there's a particular sequence that you go through, yet there is a progression through the practices within each of those or with any of them to support our deepening in our, again, in our own experience of ourselves. And that within, and this is where it sort of, as practitioners of cranial sacral work and biodynamic work, we do a lot of our, within the foundation training and also ongoing, we want to foster our ability to discern, right, what we're experiencing within a session. And with the realization process, she invites us to experience what she's, and she's specific in the language in that she uses to evoke our own subjective experiences.
I'd noticed that in the one practice that I heard. The language was carefully chosen and placed.
It's very, very, very specific. And part of that, if you have, or if you ever do, if any of, you know, your listeners listen to any of her other podcasts or read her books, that she's chosen words to try, as hard as it is, to take away some of the other cultural impositions that we put on words.
Yeah.
Right? So that in itself is inviting people to have their own subjective experience of something that is inherently there all the time, right? So she uses the words qualities, and she uses the word attune. And for us as cranial therapists, we would attune, we would use that word, I would equate that to resonate, right? See, feel, however we as practitioners receive information, whether, you know, what are our strongest senses, if we see it visually, if we hear a vibration, if we sense it through the anatomy, that with the realization process, she's going to say, attune to a particular quality, right? So she leads, the practices lead us through this sense of a quality of self, for instance. Like, what is that quality of self for you? And again, the intention is for us to be with and notice ourselves. And that we understand as practitioners that we've experienced it in our clients, right? That we, in our life experiences, we organize ourselves in relationship to our life experiences, or, you know, with our life experience, we organize ourselves, right? The chicken and the egg. And that we are always meeting those conditions when we're working with our clients, how their physiology has learned to organize itself, the inertial fulcrums, right? The automatic shifting fulcrums or the inertial fulcrums that we come into relationship with. That it's very similar to the languaging is different in the realization process, yet there's this understanding of how we have each, again, organized ourselves in relationship to the conditions we've met in life. And that our physiology, you know, we know through all the wonderful neurobiological research that's happened over the past 10, 20 years that, you know, the phrases of now that we're using that, you know, what we practice is, that what the nervous system practices is what it does. Now I can't even think of the catchphrase right now, right? Of
neurons that fire together,
wire together. That's it. Thank you. Yes. So yes, the neurons that wire together, fire together.
Fire together, wire together. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And that as we meet the conditions, right, in our clients, that we're supporting that wiring and changing, right? And understanding the functions of potency that can shift as we meet those conditions. And that then, to sort of bring it back into how that segues into the realization process for practitioners, for cranial therapists, that as you do these practices, it can refine our abilities to discern how someone has organized themselves, including ourselves, on this subtle level, right? On the subtle, if you will, energetic level of ourselves. And then to bring it to the other thing that, you know, that I mentioned for myself that's so important in my practice is really supporting clients in their empowerment of taking care of themselves and having tools to take care of themselves, that this is a practice that they can do where they can come into contact with these ways that they've, you know, organized themselves. And as we know, most times without choice, right? It's just like, You meet something, you meet a condition of an abrasive parent, and you're gonna restrict the way you talk, or you're gonna pull in your breath, or there's the many ways that we learn to adapt our adaptive strategies as we navigate challenges in life, so that I use the realization process with my clients to support their observer, right? The ability to have our cognitive awareness, our prefrontal cortex online as we're touching into the constrictions in our bodies, which is one of the strong pieces that Judith teaches in the work. It's this, how do you touch into it? It's sort of like the shuttling work that we do, right, in cranial work, at least that Franklin taught, that, you know, you touch into an area of constriction and then you come back to an area of resource, right?
So tell me a bit more what this actually looks like in the clinic. Like, you'll talk them through one of the practices while they're sitting in a chair before a session, after for integration, during, while they're on the table. Be more specific if you could on how you're applying it.
Yeah, so typically, I try to keep it pretty clean in terms of, this is a tool that I can offer you, and let's do a meditation before we settle onto the table.
Great.
To support your internal felt sense of steadiness.
Yeah.
Right. You're, and or however, because in some ways it really works very seamlessly with whatever practices we each may have in place to teach people about resourcing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And whether that, depending on the kind of clients that we're each working with, that we understand that for some folks, they cannot do internal resourcing, right? They may be so, their history may be so large and intense that they can't come into relationship with their body yet. So the resourcing needs to be external. So there, for me as a practitioner, that's one of the things that I'm working with is someone's ability to do that resourcing work. And so it's not until they are actually able to do a little more internal resourcing that then I'll even introduce the realization process. Excuse me. I would, at that point, I typically introduce people more to mindfulness-based, okay, right? Stress reduction kind of stuff. And I'll refer them to Insight Timer or some of my favorite folks in the city who do MBSR.
Yeah. So the realization process it's very spatially oriented, is my impression.
Yeah.
Very much about where are we feeling space, orienting to in space, connecting to space, and how are we relating to that. And yeah. So I could see where going into internal spaces for many clients is just going to be a little bit too much. You got to learn how to navigate and judge when they can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that again, for me as a practitioner, that is one of the essential parts of how I'm taking someone, you know, through, you know, maybe the first 3 or 10 sessions, that resourcing piece before I may even move to the table with them.
Yep.
They, you know, they may not be able to negotiate touch, mm-hmm, right, with awareness. So that's when, right, I may start with some mindfulness kind of stuff first and working with this sort of beginning understanding of the physiology, right? I also do a lot of, which I'm sure you do too, it's like the neurophysiological, psychophysiological, educational pieces of, you know, you're sitting there and I'm sitting here and what's it like and how's your nervous system responding to you being there and me being here, so that I'm educating them also as we go along, again, because so much of my work is early developmental work at this point and complex medical issues, that it's important for me to support the client's abilities to slow things down and build that prefrontal cortex awareness and really take their time in that, because as we know, as those of us who work with a lot of trauma, that things went way too fast at some point.
Yeah.
And so giving them this gift of learning that this work is not going to happen in 3 sessions. And that it takes time and practice, and that it really is your neurophysiology that needs this practice. That rewiring, laying the new neural networks, it takes a lot of practice. Yeah. And that then when I'm ready to support them in working with the realization process, I offer classes. So I can do it individually. I also do it in groups. And right now I've completely shifted all of that to the Zoom format in these times. And I'm doing it for free, a half hour meditation twice a week. And then I'm teaching a class every Saturday morning too.
So to get a clear picture of what this looks like, you may have clients, they come in and you both discover through your work that they could use some more work with internal resourcing, and then they will start to attend your classes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they choose to. And because it isn't for everybody. Because, yeah, if those, if your listeners listen to that meditation, it's very specific work,
mm-hmm,
right? It's kind of like heavy lifting when it comes to a meditative exercise. For those of us as biodynamic cranial practitioners, not just, you know, biodynamic, but as cranial practitioners, we're used to that kind of being able to, the minutiae of shifting our awareness from field within field within field. Mm-hmm. Yet for a client, it's like, what are you asking me to do? This is exhausting. You want me to breathe and feel my feet? What do you mean, breathe and feel my feet?
Those of us that get into this for professional work over the years, we really forget how far we've come sometimes, I think, and yeah, how some of our clients are coming in off the street with no real reference point for a lot mm-hmm. of what we're bringing to them. I really like that model of having an additional resource available for your clients or your peers or whoever that want to yeah. come and enjoy the energy of the group to develop some of that stabilization of their yeah. awareness. That's a great yeah. little additional offering to help solidify therapeutic progress for them, but also an ongoing relationship with you.
Yeah, yeah. And to say, I'll put it out right now that I haven't really thought about this until this very moment, but it would be a dream come true for me that I hadn't even imagined that I could do specifically online realization process classes for cranial sacral therapists.
Ah.
And just have it be, how can this work? How can we adapt this work to support us in our practice? And as practitioners, right?
Right.
Because I love this work, and it has brought in such a dimension for me as a practitioner to hold, right? To hold what we're often asked to hold with our clients. So, it reinforces my own stabilization. And then also to have that the freedom, like we talked about, like the when first walking into the foundation training, of like, oh my God, these are my peeps.
Yeah.
You know, how can I explore the realization process with my peeps and have some fun with?
I'm intrigued. I hope you continue down that path of exploration. Let me know how that unfolds for you. I think we'd have no problem finding enough people that were interested in it. The realization process, when I first heard about it, I'm kind of like, some fringy new ripoff of Eastern meditation. But then it just continues to grow, and it's growing, and there's more teachers. And the comments and things that I'm hearing about it are like, this is really efficient and very powerful and very relevant and accessible to many, many people. So, you know, I'm listening more and more to what's coming out of that camp.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And you know, that piece that I said that was so important for me, that it's not aligned with any lineage. I don't have to, if I don't want to, I don't have to learn, right? Sutras, I don't have to study.
Yeah.
Right. It's like I'm, you know, at this point in my life, I'm like, I really just want to study cranial work. And you know, this is my first love. And I want to experience myself spiritually. I'm at that place where, you know, at this age, that I want to have the experiences. I don't need to have the intellect and the understanding of it anymore. Right. I did that, right? I dove into that in my 20s and 30s, which I didn't mention. But yeah, I mean, you know, I did that. And now it's like, I feel like I just want to like be in the experiential side of things. And you're absolutely right. The realization process, that's for me, that's what it's all about. It's so simple, yet complex, yet not complex. And efficient. It's so efficient.
That's one of the things that I just greatly felt. I'm like, there's an efficiency here that mm-hmm. I rarely see, and I'm a big fan of efficiency.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And to circle back around for me again, it's like, oh boy, I like to go in circles, don't I? My experience as a long distance runner, I know that running hill repeats hurt like hell. And it got boring doing it in New York City because I would have to run the same loop in Central Park. And yet I saw the benefits of it from doing the same thing week after week after week. My nervous system changed, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a different goal in mind there. But my whole body, mind now knows that if I practice, something changes. And so it's okay for me to do, there's two basic practices within the realization process. One is the one that, you know, you played, that's like 25 minutes long, and another one that's only like 15 minutes long, that's more about coming into central channel, primal midline, coming into primal midline. And just doing those on a regular basis has been transformative for me. Mm-hmm. Again, and just my own experience of myself and feeling my own internal constrictions shift, both within the tissues and then also energetically, right? My chakras, my primary respiration, my own experience of primary respiration.
Yeah. Well, it's very clear that this relates directly to the perceptual realm that many of us spend our time in doing this kind of work. So I'm really excited to hear how this marriage unfolds. You can tell there's going to be more and more people from the cranial world moving in to this and exploring how it fits into their practice. So it seems like we're really kind of early on in that tree branch starting.
Yeah.
You and Shannon are pretty early in the mix, sowing seeds with the cranial community with that. Are there other people that you've met in other parts of the country or the world that are into cranial work doing this?
That do the realization process.
When I looked through the list of approved teachers, I saw Shannon.
Yeah, my partner, Lori Dawson, she's obviously here in New York City also, and mm-hmm. she's a biodynamic cranial sacral therapist also. And so she does the realization process. I don't think there is. Oh, no, there's one. Now I can't remember her name. There's a couple of people up in New Hampshire who've been studying with Judith, for a long time.
All right, so there's a few. If you could kind of line out for us, what is the traditional structure around training? It's in-person workshops has been mostly, but I saw that there's an online training that's going to be happening. It's multi-day training.
Yeah.
What's the experience like doing an in-person multi-day? Is it a certification training or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to become a teacher, to become a teacher of the realization process, there is a certification, and the three legs that I mentioned, being the psycho-spiritual side of it, the movement part of it, and then just the meditative part of it. Mm-hmm. That you can do those three in any order that you want. It's just that she does require for certification that you do those three modules, and they are typically 5 days each or 4.5 days each. Okay. And there are a number of people now three or four people who are teaching, who are able to do the teacher training certification. If you go to the realizationprocess.org, you can find those senior teachers, and all of them are certified to teach the teacher training.
Okay.
So if you're just interested in wanting to practice it and learn how to do it for yourself and sort of start to incorporate it in your own practices, not in your own personal practices, not in your professional practice with clients, then you could pick any of those. And just because in each of those three modules, they do the basic 15 practices that are sort of the core practices of the realization process. So you would have that experience in all of those three different traditions or legs of the trainings.
So the in-person class experience, what is that like? Are you doing, is there lecture? Is there interpersonal interaction? Is it a bunch of meditation? Kind of what's the feeling of a day like?
Yeah. In some ways, I would liken it to the foundation training.
All right.
In that you come together in the morning, you do the initial practice, the one that you posted on the podcast is what typically the teacher will start the day with. Then there's a lecture, And then there is more practices, a lunch break, and also you'll do the practices. And if you're in the teacher training, there'll be didactic exercises, right? Okay. Where you'll lead each other through the practices, discuss it afterwards, and then come back into the group and discuss that as well. So there's teachings and learnings around teaching the practices. Then there's also the nuances of what comes up as you're teaching it, and to support people in becoming teachers. So that, Judith, who's been doing it for 40 years, lends her insights into how to teach the work and support people as they're learning it, which again is right. It's kind of similar to what we go through in the foundation trainings, right? Yeah. It's like, you're on the table and you're trying to learn how to do the vault hold, and all of a sudden you start to cry. So, you sit down and you do that exercise, again, the exercise that you played, and, you attune to the quality of love in your chest and you burst into tears.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Judith. Not necessarily her biography, but like, what's she like? What's her vibe like?
Oh, gosh. She is wonderful. She is one of those teachers that when you're with them, you're also, there's a transmission that's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've experienced that with other teachers. Mm-hmm. I definitely experienced that with Franklin. And so there's that softness that we experience within the field when transmission is happening, and a wonderful sense of humor. She's really has such a great sense of humor. And her intellect is crystal sharp. She's a synthesizer. She's one of those synthesizers, which I have a big respect for, that she did study. She studied both Hindu and Buddhist traditions. She was in the monastery up in Woodstock. I can't remember for how many years now, but so she was deep in it, and studied in India as well. And she's a psychologist, so she has great intellectual strength, and yet that quality of love that you experience, right? That, again, I'm sure you've experienced with some of your teachers, that just permeates the field, that softness of that quality of love. She definitely brings that wherever she goes.
Wow. Well, this has been super informative, really helping me to better understand what's flowering out of this group of people that are saying Judith is doing really good work. So thank you so much for taking the time and sharing this with us. Is there anything else you want to go over or cover while you're on with me here?
Now, sort of reflecting on our conversation, I know that there are so many options out there for people to pursue. Mm-hmm. And like everybody, just in this past month of sheltering at home, it's like our inboxes are like full.
It's crazy.
Of new things. And I just keep like unsubscribe.
I've done a lot of that too. I'm not the only one.
It's kind of like that rapid fire understanding of, no, this isn't, and it's like letting it land in the system and going, no, this isn't going to work for me. So I would really invite people to, within our community, to source it out and experience it. And as I say to my clients, one session of a biodynamic session is not enough, right? You need three at least if you've never done the work. So with the realization process, you need to have a number of experiences to start to really get that embodied sense of what it could potentially do for you as a person and as a practitioner. So I really would send that message out, please. invite all of my colleagues to try it.
Great. So if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about you, what's the best way for them to do that?
LizHartshorn.com, HartshorN. Yeah, so LizHartshorn.org. And my email is liz.hartshorn@gmail.com, so they can email me.
Okay.
Either way. And the realization process, you can get in touch with Judith also and see all the offerings on realization.org.
Excellent. Yeah.
And stay in touch once you reach out to me, because I do feel like things are kind of blowing up for me, and I'm going to try to do this mad scramble of trying to organize what the realization process is going to be going forward for me.
Excellent. Cool. Great. Well, take care of yourself out there in New York City. A lot of people are concerned for everybody's welfare out there. So we're all sending you good vibes.
Yeah. Yeah, all of us. Yeah, it's not just here in New York. We all need to stay safe and stay healthy and stay connected. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I've listened to you from the beginning, and it's really great to be able to see you, even though it's Skype, and feel a warmth in my heart, even though we don't know each other.
Oh, well, thank you.
I want to feel some camaraderie as a colleague.
Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed my four-week-old beard.
I know, you're a different man.
And my long hair. And you can't tell, but I haven't showered in about 5 days, and I love it.
I know. It's our new normal.
I know. I feel like my body's more natural than it's been really quite some time. It's great.
Yeah, I know, right? It's one of the many layers of things that are changing these days. And it's like, oh, wow, this is okay. I'm comfortable with this.
Yeah, this is working. Okay, thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Ryan. Be well.